Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crypto Market Rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency, from the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the charts. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And we're back. I mean, man, quite a volatile week since we have last spoken. We saw Bitcoin go up to 60K, down to around, 52K? Now we're back up pushing into 57K. We have been all over the place in nearly an $8,000 range since we have last done this thing. And we actually got quite a bit of news going on in today's episode. And last week, we were a bit more hesitant. We were a little bit more cautious. We said, hey, be careful of September. Be careful of Bitcoin falling to the lower 50s. That's exactly what we saw. And then this time, we're shifting sentiment. We are shifting from a more cautious, you know, maybe even a little bit pessimistic approach to a very optimistic approach, because there's a bunch of really positive stuff happening. We're seeing price action shift back to the upside. The downside target has hit. And with that comes a lot of news that is ultimately driving all these different, technical pieces of data that we're going to look at in today's episode. So if you want to stay up to date on everything that's happening, we humbly believe that this is the best place to do it. And also, we're going to have a lot of articles and charts and pieces of information and videos that we are going to be putting on screen. So if you want to stay along and kind of follow along with everything that we are putting on the screens, you got to go over to our YouTube channel. It's the Crypto 101 podcast on YouTube, and that's where you're going to be able to see all the visuals for anyone that's tuning in from Audible, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Now, with that being said, TiVo, are you ready for this episode here?
Yeah, excited to be back. I think we teed it up well last week talking about kind of seasonality, how September for, and also for the traditional markets, over the historical average is not the best time, whether it's, you know, the political cycle that right now with a debate happening this week, which we're not going to cover here, but we are going to cover some election history that we'll show you in a second, or just, you know, people coming back from vacation and seeing the new lay of the land and kind of having that, you know, final quarter approach to their finances. Again, whether it's traditional markets or the crypto markets, I feel like, you know, we got a good taste of that last week and we prepared everybody for it. So, you know, you can't get them all right, but, you know, hopefully you listened last week and we're ready for what happened over the last 7 days. And we're back again today to try to share some more positive news in the news cycle.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, let's start with rough September, right? Because historically looking, you know, we checked out last week about how September is the worst month out of the last 10 years. In fact, 7 out of the last 10 Septembers are red. We usually see a drawdown, which is followed by the best performing month in October. Now, what does that mean? Well, we kind of said, hey, out of the worst performing month comes the best dip buying opportunity, because the subsequent following month is the best buying opportunity, or that's the best performing month. So what we really see and what we kind of inferred from that information is that September presents arguably one of the best buying opportunities for Bitcoin, historically speaking, at least over the last 10 years here. And so now we're saying, well, where could we go to the downside? That was one of the big things that we took a look at last week. And we said, hey, the lower part of the 50,000s is a reasonable area for Bitcoin. Sure enough, that's exactly where we came to. So I want to flash a chart up on the screen. We're going to take a quick look at this, and then we're going to continue on over here. But essentially, what we're having happen is exactly that, or rather what we had happen was exactly that. We saw Bitcoin retrace from the 20-day moving average around 60K all the way down to around 52K down here. This is an area where we have seen buyers before. It's the bottom of this falling channel that we've been taking a look at for weeks now. And Bitcoin came right down into the 52,000s and bounced. And every single day since then has been green, with Bitcoin going from 52K all the way up above 58K once again to the 20-day moving average. Now, we can very clearly see that there is a falling level of resistance over here on Bitcoin. It's starting to get back up into resistance as it pushes into 60K. I think that's going to be a big area to watch out for as we head into the remainder of this week, or maybe even in coming weeks. But it looks like there's going to be the bulk of resistance at 60K, the bulk of support around the low 50s, you know, right around 52-ish. So these are all things that I'm keeping an eye on. And I don't know if we're entirely out of the clear yet. You know, I don't know if we're home free and we're set for all-time highs next. I'm not sure that we're completely out of the clear. We haven't broken any kind of downtrend yet. We haven't broken the moving averages. We haven't broken any areas of support. We're still seeing lower highs. But with this, this actually marks a higher low, which is the first step in a right direction of Bitcoin. And it's a good thing to see. And we actually saw quite a nice recovery over here from altcoins as well, because we saw a little bit of a retracement in Bitcoin dominance as this thing fell almost an entire percentage point since the top out that it had. Now, it still looks strong. It's still really high up. But what we are seeing here is the kind of setup process for what could be a larger continuation to the upside. And I like what I'm seeing so far. So I think all of that is good. And again, really the big thing that I'm looking out for is kind of going back to that September chart and just understanding, hey, out of this month, historically, it is one of the worst performing months in Bitcoin, but out of that bad performance comes one of the best buying opportunities that produces the best performing month. And that's something that I really want to capitalize over here on. And so what we can see from a chart like this one, you know, Cointelegraph put this out, and basically, the summary of it is they were showing the miners' net position change from drastically red, and you can start to see it taper off here and switch from red to green. Now, the caption from this was, congrats, everyone. Hey, you made it through one of the biggest Bitcoin capitulation events in history. And I don't think that they're wrong with here. In fact, I actually, you know, quite agree with them in that this was probably one of the largest Bitcoin capitulation events in history. Now, was it a full-fledged bear market cycle? No, it wasn't quite that, but that's where we go to this capitulation event. We are starting to see the bears get exhausted. And if we go back to the charts just briefly, we can see that from the MACD and the RSI, we've been seeing higher lows on both the MACD and the RSI. Now, this means that the bears are getting weaker upon every sell-off, upon every attempt to the downside, since this summer. So for the last like 3-4 months now, the bears, despite pushing maybe prices around and making it choppy, the bears have been getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And that's exactly what Cointelegraph was showing from this tweet, just saying, hey, the bears and any kind of capitulation, it's happening here. And the pivot point could very likely, if it hasn't already happened, it could very likely be very close. So we're keeping an eye out on this one. And I think it's a really good thing to see. But another one that I noticed was that the US spot Bitcoin ETFs have returned to seeing positive inflows of around $28 million. Now, this was big news. This was something that we had, at least as of lately, we'd started seeing the sell-off happen and the ETFs were seeing outflows, which makes sense, right? I mean, we go back, we look at this Bitcoin chart, we throw up the price, and we fell from 65K all the way down to 52K. I mean, we fell, you know, nearly $13,000 in price. I think it's reasonable that we see a little bit of ETF outflows. But now what we're seeing is, again, feeding into that argument of pivoting and capitulation and other things like that. We're starting to see the trend reverse from outflows to inflows in the US spot Bitcoin ETFs. Just another sign that, hey, we're starting to move in the right direction here. And these are all things that we're looking out for. I mean, if anyone's looking for a market reversal, these are some of the key things that we want to see. We want to see a higher low on the price chart. We want to start seeing capitulation ending. We want to start seeing a lot of these other factors. We want to see ETFs begin to have inflows again, and whatever it may be. These are the things that we want to watch out for. And alongside of this is activity, which is something that we're going to talk about as well. But I mean, Tivo, did any of this stand out to you? Did you find any of this just a little bit, maybe even surprising?
Yes and no. I mean, I think on this, when it comes to the flows with the ETF, I definitely wouldn't call it surprising, because I think we're in the era of big money, right? And smart money knows, you know, when to make their move. So, you know, I think when there's a lot of kind of retail frustration, and especially we talked about recently how, you know, our X timelines have been so negative, it reminded us of when we were at the bottom of the FTX, you know, debacle, right? It was, everybody's so upset, and, you know, we thought ETFs would get approval to, you know, one way to the moon, you know, the next month. And, you know, we had a lot of grit football season. So we'll go with the grit of, you know, this range and just dealing with it and trying to be smart. And you know, some people can play the range. You know, I know you're a trader and you kind of, you know, broadcast that and a lot of, you know, products that we do have in our community as kind of leading the trading group of all of us, passive investors. And you know, if you know what you're doing, you can have fun, I think, in the range. But also, if you don't know what you're doing, you can get liquidated. You can get, you know, zeroed out. And that's, I feel like, a lot of people, especially maybe in the meme coin game during this range.
I had a call the other day and someone came in and they said something that really resonated with me. And it was that even after all of the money that we have seen pour into these Bitcoin ETFs, it still only represents around 0.25% of their entire assets under management. So to put that in perspective, they have about $50 billion inside of these Bitcoin ETFs, which we have seen as largely successful. That's obviously not a small amount of money. But when you look at how big these TradFi players are, that still only represents about 0.25% of their entire assets under management or their AUM. So when we look at how big this thing can become and whether Bitcoin inflows can actually increase again or whether it's gotten too big for its own you know, kind of being, I think the answer there has to be no. And what we're actually seeing is that a lot of these financial advisors that have begun to recommend Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ETFs as part of their assets under management, we've seen them recommend anywhere from 1% to 2%. You know, the aggressive ones are saying even 5%. So do I think that it's impossible for us to gravitate towards that? Maybe 1, 2, 3%. I'm not saying that BlackRock and Fidelity and these other players are going to be having 20% of their assets in Bitcoin or 50% of their assets in Bitcoin. I'm not saying that. But can we increase from maybe 0.25% overall to maybe like 1, 2, or 3% in the next several years? And I think the answer there is, yeah, I don't think that's a big ask. You know, we're starting to see a lot of these traditional financial companies really want to get plugged in with this stuff. I mean, BlackRock with their Biddle fund, literally building on Ethereum's blockchain. We've seen a lot of these other banks and financial institutions such as like Citi and JP Morgan and Bank of America all look into tokenization. And so there's a lot of interest here. And when we look at the Bitcoin ETFs and how big they can get, I really do think that we're scratching the surface. And we had a conversation, I think it was with, you know, it might have been with our guy over at Bitwise, Matt Hogan. And I believe he was the one to say this. So it was either him or one of the Bloomberg intelligence guys. But basically, they were saying a lot of the real, you know, off-risk investors or risk-off investors, rather, they want to come in a year after the ETFs are live. They want to see that these things are tried, tested, reliable, foolproof. And they want to see all the volatility get out of the way. And then about 6 months to a year after these things come out, that's when they start showing their initial kind of first forms of interest. So if when we look at the Bitcoin ETFs and the way that they are currently at around $50 billion inside of them, this thing could grow several times more and it would still barely scratch the surface of how big these TradFi institutions are. And again, I don't think it's a big ask with how much interest that they have shown to see 1 or 2% of their assets under management into Bitcoin. I think that's pretty reasonable. I think it's pretty conservative. And that would mean that they would multiply how much Bitcoin that they have inside their portfolios by anywhere from 4 to 8 times what they are currently owning, sending the current Bitcoin ETFs total assets from 50 million, maybe to a couple hundred, or excuse me, 50 billion to maybe a couple hundred billion. And again, that's something that I think is possible here in the next couple of years. You know, I doubt we're going to see that happen all by the end of this year. I think we can see some positive stuff, but it's something to watch out for as we move into the future. Now, the second point that you were talking about, Thiebaud, was about the elections. And what we've actually seen here is that, you know, crypto has become a kind of big talking point of these elections. And you have it flashed up on the screen here, but every single time we can see that Bitcoin after these elections tends to have these consolidatory periods, and then it begins to take off. So it shows, you know, exactly where we are and where we've been in previous election cycles for Bitcoin. So what about 2020 to 2021? Maybe what about 2016 to 2017? And then what about right now, 2024 leading into 2025? Well, I'll tell you what, these charts tend to look pretty similar. They're not completely identical. They're not carbon copies of one another, but you can see that where we're at right now in the overall cycle is very much the same leading into the election. There's political uncertainty. People are nervous maybe about which politicians are going to get elected. They're nervous about policies. There's just uncertainty in the air. And so when we look at what happens afterwards, that's where people start to take a deep breath. They kind of understand everything a little bit more clearly. They know what to expect. There's not the uncertainty of who will win and what the outcomes will be. They have the certainty knowing what to expect moving forward. And I'm sure also probably depending upon the candidate, people start becoming more risk on once again after the elections. And this time doesn't appear to be any different from that. We're seeing a long consolidation phase, just like we've seen in these previous few years on the chart, you know, on the screen right now. And I would imagine that in the last quarter of this year, you know, beginning of next year, we start to heat up again. And that's something that we've said on here before. And I don't think it's something that I would find surprising if we have happen again. In fact, that's something that I'm personally betting on here, saying, hey, as we head into the last part of this year, I think that that could be a positive one. So, you know, one other thing, you know, on the election side is that kind of just feeding into this idea that it is becoming increasingly more of a political issue, meaning that the topic of crypto is becoming much more of a political issue. There was just a really cool survey done showing how, I guess, involved crypto owners want to be and how much that's affecting who they're going to vote for. And what we've seen come out of this is 73% of crypto owners in the US are planning to look at a candidate's crypto agenda and saying that that will have some impact on who they're voting for, which is crazy to think about this. I mean, let's say that again, 73% of crypto owners in the US are saying that the politician's policies on cryptocurrency is going to have some impact on who they vote for. Additionally, another 37 of those respondents indicated that a presidential candidate's position on crypto would have not just some impact, but significant impact on their vote. And so crypto is becoming this unique political issue. And it makes sense because people are putting their hard-earned money into this and they don't want to see it go down the drain. They don't want to see it get destroyed. And I think that they are a little bit tired of maybe some of Gary Gensler's policies on all of this and the negative impact that that has had over the last couple of years, especially since FTX. So, yeah, I mean, it's all stuff that I'm looking at, TiVo. And
I think one other point around the election cycle is, yeah, obviously the president, White House is huge, if not, you know, really said the most important. But, you know, there's also the House and the Senate. And I know traditional markets, you know, they, a lot of people, big money managers actually, what they really root for is stalemate, right? They want a red president but a blue Congress, or a red Congress and a blue Senate. And theory of that is nothing can get done. There's going to be a lot of filibustering on these bills. And if there's two sides that are, you know, I don't know if against each other is the right word, but with opposing views, is that nothing gets passed through Congress that goes to the Senate that goes to the president. So if you have kind of that stalemate dynamic, that certainty for the markets. So that's another way to give it too, is, you know, if you're a very political person on one side of the aisle or another, don't think that it's an all or nothing type of thing. You know, there's multiple outcomes. So, you know, the Senate and Congress races are also important as well for crypto and, you know, for the markets.
And we're just seeing that crypto is becoming a really big talking point in just about every sense. And I know that Michael Saylor came out recently here and he was on CNBC saying, hey, I think Bitcoin is going to become 7% of all the capital in the world. And what this would mean is that Bitcoin would have to hit around a $13 million price point per token. So I know that we got a clip to roll around this. So let's go ahead and roll that clip and see what Michael had to say.
Now, Bitcoin's 0.1% of the capital in the world right now. I think it's going to go to 7% of the capital.
7%.
My long-term forecast is it's going to go to 13 million over 21 years.
13 million.
13 million. But what is it 5 years from now? You're in your four-year calculus.
You know, it's been growing 44% a year with about a 40 to 50 vol. I would think it'll move on at 40%, then click down to 35, then 30, then 25. And at some point, it'll be the S&P return plus 8%, and it'll be the S&P vol plus 8%, because it's always going to be a more global, open, free capital market.
Yeah, so as he said there, he is accounting for Bitcoin continuing to grow. He said that 44% growth rate year over year. And the thing that I really liked here, TiVo, is that he was accounting for that slowing down as the market cap increased. You know, as this thing becomes worth trillions and trillions of dollars, the larger it gets, it makes sense that it's going to begin to move more slowly. And he's an intelligent guy. I mean, he's a smart dude. He understands this. He's not saying, oh, we're going to increase. The larger we get, we're going to go up to 100% year over year growth. No, he's saying, hey, as this thing gets bigger, it makes sense that it's going to start slowing down. We'll go from 44 to 40% to 35% to 30%. Eventually, we'll get to doing whatever the S&P is doing, plus maybe 8%, because it's always going to be a more global asset. You know, you look at its inflation rate, you look at what goes into it, you look at its, well, I would also even say its mining rate alongside its inflation rate, because the two are kind of one and the same, and that will continually decrease every 4 years with the halving. And that would be a cool thing to see. I know that there's a lot of listeners out here going, you know, I own a tenth of a Bitcoin. That'd be 1.3 million. You know, I own a whole Bitcoin. That would be 13 million. I own half a Bitcoin. You know, that'd put me over, you know, 6.5 million. And so this is a big price point. Now, is it possible? We'll see. We see a lot of these gigantic price predictions for Bitcoin get thrown around. A lot of these people are also talking their bags. You have to understand that he's one of the biggest Bitcoin holders out there. So I would imagine there's no world where he comes out and he goes, I don't think Bitcoin's going to do that well. He almost has to come out and say that Bitcoin is going to do really good. That's kind of his whole thing. And I don't disagree with him, right? I think Bitcoin is going to do great. But, you know, let's take these crazy multi-million dollar predictions for Bitcoin with a grain of salt. Is it possible one day? Absolutely. But I don't think that a $13 million price prediction for Bitcoin is going to be something that happens in the short term to midterm future. So that's all that I'd say with this, is that we see a lot of these price predictions get thrown around, and to take them with a grain of salt, especially if you are maybe a more short to midterm investor.
100%. And definitely anybody out there that hasn't seen any of that footage, we gave you like a 90-second clip, but go on X, search Michael Saylor, you know, CNBC, it'll pop up right away. And I thought it was really great. I think it was like a 10-minute segment. And I think Michael Saylor is really interesting to listen to. He's a great speaker, great deliver. And there's podcasts. I know he did a lot of keynote speeches, and a lot of those are like an hour plus. So I thought this was a perfectly condensed 10 minutes. He got a lot of pushback from the, you know, the CNBC hosts. And it was just a good conversation. I thought it was a really cool 10-minute, kind of hit a bunch of different areas, everything around price to, you know, the volatility, to comparing to gold, all that stuff. So if you're interested, it's definitely something worth going to take a look.
Definitely. Well, we want to leave everyone with one more very lighthearted, kind of cool piece of information alongside the Base ecosystem. So we're shifting gears over to Ethereum and its L2s. And what we've seen here in recent months, especially in recent weeks, is that Base has just been taking off in activity and traders. And this is something that we've touched on in the past. But what we're really seeing here is that Base now has more weekly DEX traders than all other L2s combined. That means ZK Sync, Arbitrum, Optimism, Polygon, Scroll, even the Ethereum like mainnet we have over there. I mean, Base is dominating with over 1 million traders. It's a crazy metric, and there's a ton of activity that is happening over here. Now, if you're not familiar with Base as a layer two, this is the L2, the layer two that Coinbase put out, and it has become wildly successful. There's all sorts of projects that are trying to launch on this, and we're just seeing a lot of activity. So if you're someone that hasn't heard of Base yet, this might be your sign to go look into it. Again, I'm not telling you to invest. I'm not telling you to do anything else. But if you haven't even looked into what Base is, I think that this is your sign to at least go research it, in the very least, and understand why it's gaining so much traction, because this has quickly blown up into being one of the most active and largest layer twos on Ethereum that is just taken over. So, you know, this trend could very well continue, and I think that it's something that everyone should be paying attention to. But overall, you know, this is a cool metric. And one of the things I'm interested in seeing here, TiVo, is how is Base going to compare to Solana? Because we've talked about Solana in recent weeks being able to outperform Ethereum. But what about Base versus Solana? You know, maybe Base is Ethereum's version of truly competing with Solana. Because when we look at activity, that's really where Ethereum has been losing to Solana, is transactions and trading activity and DEX volume and things like that. But maybe Base is Ethereum's way of evening the playing field.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we're always looking for the big flippings, right? Who's going to flip Ethereum? Who's going to flip Solana? And, you know, I think Base has definitely, and again, you're more of the in the weeds technical and seeing what's going on chain activity. I mean, I'll tell you from this point that, you know, from an app perspective and a social media perspective, that no project has had more engagement on the timeline than Base, I think, coming out of the gate.
It definitely is. So you better bet that we're going to continue to keep tabs on everything that's happening, not only in Bitcoin and the general crypto market, but also these more specific niche markets like Solana and the L2s like Base and everything else. So we appreciate everyone for coming in here. That is going to wrap us up for this week's episode. Man, we hope that all of you enjoyed. And if you want to continue to follow along, then make sure that you're subscribed. Make sure that you are tuning into these things, because we publish these market rundowns every single week for all of you to enjoy freely. And if you want to get more plugged in, again, head over to the YouTube channel. Head over to some of the other stuff that we got going on, because we got a lot of great communities that everyone can get plugged into. But that's going to be it for this week's episode, everyone. Thank you all for tuning in, and we're going to see you at the same time, same place next week.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.